Let's call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record indicate that it is 2:50 p.m. on April 16, 2015. Present with us today, we have Vice Chair Representative Sadler, Representative Pruitt, Representative Wilson, Representative Guttenberg, Representative Kawasaki, and myself, Co-Chair Thompson. Before we start, please make sure you turn off your cell phones. They interfere with the recording equipment. Today's schedule, we are hearing SB 26, SB 71, and HB 81. We're going to go down to Senate Bill 71, an act relating to the practice of pharmacy and relating to the administration of vaccines and related emergency medications by Senator Giesel. We've been joined by Representative Guerra. Today, introducing Senate Bill 71 to the House Finance Committee is Senator Giesel's and her staff, Ms. Jane Conway. Senator and Ms. Conway, please come up to the table, place yourselves on the record, and present SB 71.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, thank you for hearing the bill today. For the record, I'm Senator Kathy Giesel, representing District N. So Senate Bill 71, sorry.
I remember that number.
Yeah. Anyway, this is Senate Bill 71. It allows Alaska pharmacists to administer all vaccines without what's called a collaborative practice agreement. So a collaborative practice agreement is a contract or agreement with a healthcare provider, either a physician or nurse practitioner, who will oversee and approve the pharmacist's administration of vaccines. This has been in place since 2001. These kinds of contracts cost anywhere from $50 to $500 for the pharmacist to execute, to find someone who will oversee their administration of these vaccines. It is often difficult for them, especially in rural Alaska, to find a physician or nurse practitioner who has the time to do the paperwork and things like that. Right now, in Senate Bill 71, already educated and certified pharmacists would have the authority to offer immunization to Alaska adults and children without having to have the oversight agreements in place. Now, one of the things I want to make sure you understand, Mr. Chairman, is that for pharmacists who have been educated since 2005, vaccine administration is part of their curriculum, preparing them for this profession. I also want to point out that the level of entry into the pharmacy profession now is a PhD, that is a pharmacology doctorate degree. So these are highly educated folks. The bill provides that pharmacists educated before 2005 would have to take a vaccine administration course that would be approved by the Board of Pharmacy to make sure their skills were up to speed and all of that. There is absolutely no question that pharmacists already have the knowledge about vaccines. They certainly understand all medications, their interactions, how to respond to an adverse event, how to take a patient history, evaluate other medications that the patient is on, et cetera. So that's already part of what they do. I, as a nurse practitioner in prescribing, if I have any questions, the person I call is a pharmacist because this healthcare professional is specialized in this kind of information. So this will particularly help rural pharmacies in that certainly they won't have any more limitations on having to have these collaborative agreements. It's also interesting to note, and you probably think in your own lives, you interact with your pharmacist probably more than you interact with a healthcare provider because they're at the corner drugstore, you're buying shampoo, you're picking up aspirin, whatever, and there is your pharmacist. In states where pharmacists have this authority to independently administer the vaccines, immunization rates go up. Alaska has a very low immunization rate. We'd like to correct that because it's preventative and will lower healthcare costs. One of the questions that's come up in committees in other bodies and in this body, how will the vaccines administered be recorded? They are recorded even now in a system, a statewide accessible record-keeping database called VacTrax. So they will continue to log in those vaccines there so that all healthcare providers can access that information. In 2013, Alaska's pharmacists administered over 13,000 flu vaccines. So this is a common way that people access vaccines, and this bill will only improve that access, Mr. Chairman. So with that, my staff, Jane Conway, can take you through a section of analysis or the fiscal note if you're interested.
Thank you, Senator. We have questions from the committee. Representative Sadler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Read the bill shows I don't have any tremendous, I'm sorry, a somewhat peripheral question. Where are there weaknesses, in your opinion, Senator, of the system in the state of recording vaccinations? You just mentioned it, BACVAX, but are there areas in the system that need to be improved or strengthened? I know that doesn't directly relate to this bill, but.
Representative Sadler, through the chair, VACTRAX has been in place now for a number of years. I can't tell you how many, but all healthcare providers use that system and enter the data there. It has vastly improved our tracking of vaccines and certainly helped with school children, of course, because we have a central database where a parent could get that vaccine record. I'm not sure I know where there are flaws in that.
Thank you.
Follow up?
No, thanks.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I like this bill a lot better than the other one that was mentioned, but I did have a couple questions. The question that I had about pharmacists before 2005 receiving a training, I mean, basically to the level of which to be trained sounded fine with me. But can you tell me how it works currently? The way it sounds is a physician or a nurse practitioner would basically fill out paperwork saying they're essentially a preceptor for a pharmacist. Is that kind of how it works? It's just paperwork?
It's paperwork, yes. And what the nurse practitioner or physician is agreeing to do is oversee the administration. That is not they are not present in the pharmacy. They are reviewing records and things like that. It is basically paperwork. Right now in pharmacies, I happen to have been in Fred Meyer not too long ago picking up a prescription, and the pharmacist needed to talk to me, but I had to wait for him because he was in the vaccine administration room giving a vaccine at that particular time. So I waited a few minutes. So this system is already in place. We're simply removing a paperwork piece of it and allowing these doctorally prepared professionals to do what they do best, and that is administer medication.
And then follow
all up, Representative Kawasaki.
I have a question about the fiscal note, but I'll wait for the department. The other question is, we have some support from the Pharmacists Association and some pharmacists, and my pharmacist up in Fairbanks area has a letter in here of support. We don't have any comments, though, from, like, the State Medical Board or the Medical Association. I'm curious if they'd been consulted on this potential change, which is, I don't think it's significant, but whether they've gotten an opinion.
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, we have not received any opposition from the many medical societies or nursing organizations. I have not approached them specifically asking, but generally they're pretty good about speaking up.
Yes, they are. Thank you.
We've been joined by Representative Munoz. Next, we have Representative Guttenberg has questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So most of this is it is a policy change, but it is mostly the change is the way they do business. But in the pharmacy itself, are they going to need to do changes? I mean, they have all the drugs in the world, lots of controlled substances, but for this, is it perceived that there's going to be an expanded category of things for them to be giving that they don't currently stock, or is it just pretty much what's available now, except they will be able to do it without a doctor overseeing their role? Are there other vaccines that they're going to be doing that they're currently not doing?
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, I cannot with strong authority answer that question. They do currently administer other vaccines, is my understanding. Of course, mainly the flu vaccine, but I believe there are a couple pharmacists online that can give you the practical answer to that question. They do, of course, in administering the flu vaccine, have to have the refrigeration supplies, the needles, syringes, etc.
Things they already stock.
Correct. Things they already stock. Thank you.
We'll be calling on several different pharmacists under public comment. But we have Sarah Chambers in the room also to answer questions from DCCED, and we have Dirk White for questions. Past president of the Board of Pharmacy is on online also. Follow-up questions, Representative Guttenberg?
Well, just for somebody from a pharmacist or somebody in the field that can answer the logistics problems on how things will change, basically.
We'll call on Dirk White. Dirk is the past president of the Board of Pharmacy and probably knowledgeable of Alaska-specific items. Dirk, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Place yourself on the record, and we'll have you answer some questions.
I'd be glad to.
Okay.
Go ahead and place yourself on the record. And
For the record, this is Dirk White. I'm a pharmacist from Sitka, Alaska, and past president of the Board of Pharmacy.
Representative Guttenberg has a question of you.
Thank you. So I'm worried about the logistical changes, not just the paperwork changes between the relationship of the pharmacist and the doctor, but the logistical changes inside the pharmacy itself, and the differences possibly between urban and rural locations. How much easier and how much advancement do you think you're going to make in rural Alaska when it's a pharmacist? I mean, there's not a lot of pharmacies in a lot of places. I don't believe there are, not the villages that I have attended, but how much easier is it going to be to do vaccines in rural Alaska as well?
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, an excellent question. One of the current, internally in the pharmacy itself, there shouldn't be any change. We'll do the patient intake forms the same way. We'll have all of the rest of the procedures will still be the same. Again, reporting to the VAC track is all consistent. One of the current limitations that we have under our collaborative practice agreements is that they're specific to a location. In other words, the Harry Race Pharmacy downtown in Sitka, 106 Lincoln, is my collaborative practice address. Now, we wanted to do a health fair here in Sitka, but we were not allowed to go to the Centennial Hall, which is half a block away from that 106 Lincoln Street to 110 Harbor Drive and give vaccinations. Say something was going to happen, if a community health fair was going to go on out in one of those villages, and a pharmacist wanted to go out and do vaccinations, they would be limited and to their location of their pharmacy. In other words, if a Walgreens pharmacist wanted to volunteer and Bernie's Pharmacy had a pharmacist that wanted to volunteer and go out to those villages, they currently, under the practice parameters of the collaborative practice agreement, would not be allowed to do that. So with this legislation, that would then free us up to be able to go to those remote communities and then administer the vaccinations with public health nurses. Does that answer your question, or does it bring up more questions?
Well, it brought up more questions. I wasn't aware of the limitations on a pharmacist to a location, and this frees them up to basically travel, you know, to
correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. White. And are there further questions from the committee? Seeing none, at this time I'd like to open up Representative Guerra.
I just had one question, so that's for Dr. Butler.
Use the microphone, please.
As for Dr. Butler, if this is the right time.
For who? Dr. Butler. Okay. Dr. Butler, would you please come up? Representative Guerra has a question. Senator, thank you very much. We'll be coming back to more questions before we finish. Dr. Butler, if you place yourself on the record, we have a question for you.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jay Butler. I'm Chief Medical Officer for the Department of Health and Social Services.
Thank you. Through the chair, Dr. Butler, we're playing doctors on TV again, so I just want to ask you, do you see any safety problems with this bill? That's all I really want to know.
Representative Guerra, through the chair, as I answer that question, let me start by addressing some of the earlier questions and point out that pharmacists already deliver a large number of vaccines in the state. So much of the discussion here centers around removing some of the obstacles that may make it more difficult to get access to vaccines. So in terms of do I have concerns about the safety of vaccines administered by pharmacists, the answer to the question is no. We already have quite a bit of experience with doing that in Alaska.
Then through the chair.
Follow up, Representative Guerra.
And does that answer also apply to the part of the bill that talks about emergency medication, which is related to vaccine reactions?
Representative Guerra, through the chair, that would be appropriate for managing those rare instances where there would be an allergic reaction to a vaccine, just as is done now under the collaborative practice agreement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Butler, or Dr. Butler.
Dr. Butler, Representative Kawasaki had a question for you.
Thank you. Thanks for being here, Dr. Butler. And kind of on the same lines, currently when you have a collaborative physician agreement, sounds like there's reports that are reviewed and looked and checked off. Absent the collaborative agreement between a physician and the pharmacist, would there still be some sort of reporting requirement due at all?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, if you're referring to, say, an adverse event to a vaccine, there would still be the vaccine adverse event reporting system, which is a tool that's available actually to pharmacists already. It's actually available to patients as well. So it's a tool that is out there. Those are data that are collected by the Food and Drug Administration and also reviewed by the Centers for Disease Control with their immunization safety monitoring group.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Butler, Representative Sadler has a question for you.
Thank you. And as our discussion goes on, we're talking almost exclusively about vaccines. And the title and the operative language on page 2, line 21, indicates there's also authorization to administer related emergency medications. And that's probably a technical term in the medical profession. What would emergency medical medications be?
Representative Sadler, through the chair. An example would be epinephrine used to address an anaphylactic reaction, which is a very rare allergic reaction that can occur after a vaccination. It's very rare after vaccinations. I think more often what everybody may be aware of as an anaphylactic reaction is a severe reaction to an insect sting. Certain drugs are more commonly associated with it, such as sulfa drugs are an example of a class of medication that can cause an anaphylactic reaction.
And follow up,
Representative Sadler.
Any special training required of administering emergency medical medications versus vaccines?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, I think the most important thing is to be able to recognize the reaction, which oftentimes is not subtle. People oftentimes are prepared to treat themselves. The so-called EpiPen, which is a self-administered device for delivering epinephrine, would be an example of that.
All right. Seeing no further questions, thank you, Dr. Butler. With no further questions, I will open SB 71 up for public testimony. Is there anybody in the room that would like to testify to Senate Bill 71? Seeing none, we do have people online. We have Liz Hotchin calling in from Olympia, Washington. We'll move on down the list to Daniel Nelson in Fairbanks. Daniel, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Place yourself on the record. Tell us who you are, and we'll hear your testimony.
Hi. My name is Daniel Nelson. I'm the president of the Alaska Pharmacists Association, calling in from Fairbanks, Alaska. I'd just like to call in support of SB 71. I don't think I want to take a lot of your time. I know you guys have a busy schedule and you're probably already behind schedule, so I just would like to echo what's already been said and voice my strong support in support or my strong voice in support of SB 71.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nelson. Next, we have Ryan Ruggles calling in from Anchorage. Ryan. Ryan Ruggles, are you there?
I apologize, Chair. I was on mute.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Place yourself on the record, please.
For the record, my name is Ryan Ruggles. I am the district pharmacy manager for Car Safeway in Alaska. I am also a pharmacist. I fully support this bill. And for the record, I suppose we do administer in our stores a long list of vaccines. I believe it's almost everything except for yellow fever. It's difficult to obtain a stamp in Alaska, but we do that throughout all of Alaska. And the what this bill really does for us is it removes the need for the collaborative practice agreement, which can be difficult to obtain. The provider we typically use, if they are absent, whether that's for a professional conference and that they're out of the area, or if they're on vacation or whatnot, that can really limit our amount, our ability to quickly serve our patients. And I think that that is one of the biggest pros to this bill, is just the continuity of care and the consistency of vaccination in all the areas that we serve. Thank you, Chair. That's all I needed to testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Ruggles. Next, we're going to move back up to Liz Hochin. Are you there now, Liz?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Place yourself on the record, please, and tell us about yourself. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. For the record, my name is Lise Houchin. I'm the Northwest Regional Director for the National Association of Chain Drug Stores. Our members in Alaska include Costco, Genoa Healthcare, Good Neighbor Pharmacy, Health Mart, Kars, Target, Walgreens, and Walmart. And I wanted to thank you very much for having a hearing on this bill today. On the behalf of our members, I would like to thank you for the hearing and on this important legislation that would allow pharmacists to independently prescribe and administer immunizations in the state of Alaska. In 2012, only 1.2% of Alaskans were immunized for influenza, ranking 49th in the country. We are encouraged by Senate Bill 71 that many additional needed vaccines will be administered in local boroughs and villages by pharmacists to patients and families that may otherwise go unimmunized. And again, thank you so much for your time, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Houchin. Next, we're going to Ketchikan, Barry Christensen. Barry, are you there?
Yes, this is Barry Christensen. I am a co-chair of the Alaska Pharmacists Association Legislative Committee. And as our president already said, we're fully supporting this bill. We think it's a win for pharmacy, a win for patients, a win for employers by helping reduce health care costs. I will address one of the questions regarding the other medical associations. Our association met pre-legislatively with both the medical and nursing folks to let them know that we're going to try to have legislation similar to what's before you today. So we think we've done our best to make sure that everybody was okay with what we were going to do. And I can answer any other questions.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Christensen. Okay. Is there anybody else in the room that would like to offer public testimony on Senate Bill 71? Is there anyone else online? Nobody else online either. At this time, then, I will close public testimony. Does the sponsor of the bill have any other comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, I have nothing more to add. Thank you.
Thank you. This brings back SB 71 before the committee for discussion. Is there further discussion? Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you. For whoever can answer the question on the fiscal notes.
Yes.
Fiscal note one is from Commerce, I think. And it discusses the $2,500 to cover legal costs to amend regulations, printing, and postage. It's covered by an increase, it looks like, in the receipt services designated general funds for 1 year. And I'm just curious, it seems like we have a lot of bills that change regulations, and I've never seen a fiscal note for any of those. And I'm just curious why the $2,500 is somehow different than than other regulatory changes.
I read that fiscal note myself, and possibly in the future with our fiscal situation, we're going to start showing a little bit more of these fiscal notes to show how much it takes to draft regulations, I would assume. It's a one-time, one-year, $2,500 cost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't
Do you have any comments on that, Representative or Senator Giesel?
Mr. Chair, Sarah Chambers from the Division of Licensing is here and can respond, and perhaps you would lend more credence to her comments. I can answer it, but I think she could do better.
It's not a lot of money, but Ms. Chambers, would you come up, please, and talk about drafting regulations for not only this one but others that are probably going to be coming to us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Sarah Chambers. I'm the Professional Licensing Operations Manager for the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. And through the Chair, Representative Kawasaki, you are correct. We are adding the request for additional authority for the average cost of a division regulations project or a board regulations project simply because we are receipt supported and we are trying to best and conservatively manage the licensing fees that we're charging to licensees who will be paying for these. We also have quite a few competing interests between the division and the board statutory and mission related authority. So once we have quite a few bills that are requesting regulations, we find ourselves in a position where tens of thousands of dollars of new regs projects later, we're having to let the boards know that they can no longer travel out of state for their mission-related responsibilities and other needs that they have. So we're trying to be conservative and transparent in the added cost that was unexpected.
So through the chair.
Follow-up, Representative Kawasaki.
I guess if this is a matter of course that in the future we're always going to see these, then I think that's fine and good. So I support the move. I just wondered why it was there. Sure. Thanks.
Representative Wilson.
So, Mr. Chair, I have no problem having this on there, but how many hours is it going to take to, you know, take off a portion of this? So I'd like to see how many hours we're talking. So as we go through it, which areas are doing. So how did you figure out it was 2,500?
Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, it's a amalgamation of the variety of expenses that go into the regs project, everywhere from the amount that Department of Law charges us and everyone else who's doing a regs project for their required review, our regulation specialist time. The bulk of the cost comes from the printing and postage because we're required to mail regs changes to all licensees. 2,500 is a average for a normal board regs expense. It could be lower, it could be higher, but for the purpose of preparing a fiscal note, unless it's one of our much larger boards like the Board of Nursing, this is our average.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Wilson.
So I'm assuming you say you have to mail it to all those who are pharmacists, I'm assuming, on this. And is there any provisions that if those would prefer to have them by email versus is there that option?
Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, that's an option we're pursuing and would like to continue discussions with Department of Law to be able to do that. Currently, though, the interpretation that we've been provided from our attorneys is that we must provide mail, but I think my forecast is that the tides are turning and we would appreciate the opportunity to communicate electronically.
And I'd know whether once you review it, whether that's a statute change, because I think for many, email an option, they could still get it by mail, but if they'd really go that way with the cost, I think we should pursue that.
Representative Pruitt has a question.
Yeah,
Ms. Chambers.
Yeah, I think it's more of a statement. I think this is an evolution from how we used to do it with this particular division, where the division handled it and then the costs were spread across all of the users. And you guys have been shifting more towards trying to make sure that the appropriate costs rest on the appropriate licensee group, if I understand some of the discussions we've had in the past. So I think this is appropriate. As we see, it's a receipt services, specifically 1157, the fund code, and it's trying to specifically place the cost with the licensees so that they also increases in fees or whatnot also are associated directly with what it's costing them. So I think this is hopefully this is the direction we should see specifically from this department on any of these scenarios where we are adjusting something with one of the with any of the licensee groups, that it is we are showing a request for appropriation, but because it's specifically targeted at that licensee group. Is that kind of a am I thinking in the right direction based on the changes that have been made over the last couple of years in this division?
Representative Pruitt, through the chair, you're exactly right. We are trying to move in a manner that provides boards more direct control and input, and make sure that expenses are directly correlated to the licensing fees of the particular licensed profession that incurred the cost.
Yeah, thank you.
Any further questions of Ms. Chambers? Sarah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on Senate Bill 71?
I have a question on fiscal note.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thanks. This is a question for Health and Social Services. Fiscal note number 3 discusses the Medicaid program would have to incur those costs of changes needed for the claims processing system, and I just wanted to hear what that will actually cost the Medicaid program system.
Dr. Butler?
Again, this is Jay Butler for the record. Representative Kawasaki through the chair. The original fiscal note showed a one-time capital request for $50,000 to be able to address the claims processing system and what was needed to be able to process claims absent the collaborative practice agreement. Subsequent to that, it was discovered that some of the performance bonus money from the federal government for CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, as I recall the rules of this committee, could be used for that. So we were able to then zero out the fiscal note.
Okay. And just one follow-up.
Follow-up, Representative Kawasaki.
So is that where the missing fiscal note 2 came from? We don't. This is fiscal note. We have 1 and 3 in our binder, so that must have been 2.
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, I actually can't answer that question of the mystery fiscal note.
We've been joined by Representative Gaddis. Thank you, Dr. Butler. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion to move Senate Bill 71 from committee. Vice Chair Sadler.
Mr. Chair, I move the committee pass Senate Bill 71, version version 29, LS0591/W for whiskey from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Any objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 71 is passed from Finance Committee, and we'll do a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. House Finance is back in session. Our next bill up is SB 26, an act making and amending appropriations, including capital appropriations, supplemental appropriations, reappropriations, and other appropriations, making appropriations to capitalize funds, making appropriations under Article 9, Section 17C, Constitution of the State of Alaska for the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund, and providing for an effective date. And this bill is by the governor. The CS for SB 26 is Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, I would like to make a motion to move committee, House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 26, Finance, Version 29-GS1781/F, dated 4/16/15, for committee referral and discussion.
Okay, we are addressing the CS today. My finance staff, Mr. Joe Michel, will walk us through the changes in Senate Bill 26. Pardon? Yep, there was no objection. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Joe Michel, staff to Representative Steve Thompson and the Finance Committee. The work draft you have in front of you is version /F, Martin. There aren't many changes in Section 1, the number section. I would direct the members to the Department of Natural Resources section. It's on page 5. And on page 5, line 30, snowmobile trail development program and grants. These are grants that are collected from the sales of snow machines and things of that nature. It's a designated program receipt, not GF. In addition, there was an item removed from this section. It was the Cooperative Water Resource Program pass-through grant to USGS for stream gauging projects. And in consultations with the department, that those programs weren't going to go forward and that wasn't needed. It was from the request of the department that was removed. Moving on to the section from transportation and public facilities, on page 14, there are three things to highlight that are different from, substantially different from the version that you might have seen from governor amendments. Line 23, Kinnickahm Crossing, $45,300,000. Those are all federal receipts. The number on line 26, National Highway System, Non-National Highway System Pavement and Bridge Reconstruction and Refurbishment Projects. Originally, there was the same number increase on that line. It is, it's almost like a placeholder that we use just in case we can receive extra federal receipts. So it didn't remove any potential chances for this, so it turned out being a net zero in regards to that addition of the Kinnickahm Crossing Federal Receipt Authority. Line 24, you'll see later on a reappropriation into the what we call the lockbox, the parking garage. For Kotzebue Cape Blossom, there was suddenly some federal receipt authority available to the tune of $33 million. That project had $4 million GF in it. So we were able to swap out that $33 million of federal receipt authority and be able to bank that $4 million GF. The next set of changes is on page 23, and it's the number section for the supplemental capital budget. So on line 23, page 23, line 22, emergency repair of state forest road systems in the Tanna Valley State Forest. That was a supplemental amendment by request of the governor. The next change is in the supplemental operating section. It's on page 27. The section starts on page 26. And on line 22, there's $40 million for Medicaid services. That is in FY15.
sorry. Where's that go? Repeat.
Repeat that again. He's on
page 27.
Oh, okay.
Line 22.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought you said it right. Continue.
All right. Those conclude all the changes for the numbers section of the capital budget. Moving on, I'm going to go by section, not by page now. I have a slightly different document. So starting on section 10 of the members' documents.
Page 32.
Because many items were supplemental items that were added by the other body near the end of their possession of the bill, I was just going to, if with the chairman's discretion, just kind of go down and go section by section. Section 10, the next about 10 sections are going to be all supplemental. $3 million for costs associated with the Alaska Correctionals Officers Association settlement for the fiscal year of 2015. In subsection B of section 10, $1,317,000 is expended for the purpose of paying for the single audit for the Department of Health and Social Services. Subsection C of section 10 is a new item, and $792,000, and it has to do with costs related to labor contract negotiations. The state of Alaska is more than likely going to have to enter into negotiations with all 12 public employee unions instead of the annual three that they normally have to. Section 11, $2,360,000 for costs associated with regulation of marijuana for the fiscal years, for fiscal year 2015-2016 for the ABC board. Section 11, subsection B, you will see the money that was originally appropriated in SLA 2012, fiscal year 2013, for the Interior Energy Project. You can see the changes. In section 12, I know it looks like a big number, but those parts are existing law. The only additional language that was added was no money appropriated in this appropriation may be expended for services to persons who are eligible under 42 USC, UCS 1396A, and it's Medicaid language to make sure no money is expended on Medicaid. The next one you'll see in subsection B of section 12. This is still supplemental. Last year, there was an oversight, and some items that were reappropriations from the Fairbanks Virology Lab did not have the words general fund placed in there. And so this one is for the match money for the Code Blue project for ambulances for communities. We wanted to put this with an earlier effective date so we can get those ambulances out sooner than later. Section 13, these are to pay for judgments and settlements. Annually, the state of Alaska has a lot of them, and this year it's going to cost us $8,889,000. Section 14, it's the Department of Natural Resources, $3 million for fire suppression. Section 15, $50,000 for costs associating with updating tax revenue management system and tax forms and drafting regulations to implement new surcharge on refined motor fuels. For the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2015. You'll see a section much later in the bill referencing this section 15. Section 16 has to do with some reappropriations for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Subsection A and B have to do with Class 5 injection wells to the tune of $3.4 million and another $3.4 million. Class 5 injection wells are the square holes you'll see in a warehouse that all the water and grease and stuff can just kind of get flowed down there into a trap. We're not allowed to do that anymore, so we have to replace all those for the DOT facilities. Section C is international airport funds. It's a reappropriation for terminal improvements and renovations at Ted Stevens International Airport. Subsection D has to do with the Caslin Bay maintenance station on Kodiak. It burned down, and we need to replace it. So there, DOT provided some reappropriation items to pay for the new Caslin Bay station. Subsection E, the members can see that that's the Dalton Highway disaster emergency repairs. The governor declared the disaster on the Dalton Highway. It's the tune of $5 million. Next section, subsection 17. I know that's another big number. We are paying about $5 million less. We have to pay $5 million less for our school bond debt. That's reflected in section 17. Section 18 is ratifications, and they continue on for a while. These are expenditures that were made last year that are on the books, and we need to make just the money's already been spent. Section 19 is language added in regards to Medicaid. Section 20, all this has been supplemental, is a fund transfer. There is a account that was in the negative amount to the tune of $13,300,000. The governor proposed making that, you know, net zeroing it. This money is also the Alaska Housing Capital Corporation account. That is also the money that you'll see later on in the bill that a lot of expiring, lapsing items have been placed in. Section 21 is reappropriating money from the Digital Teaching Initiative three-year demonstration project to the tune of $750,000 going to the Alaska Housing Capital Corporation. Subsection B, $875,000 from public safety, their APSIN system. We're tucking that away. Section 22 is not new. There's a lot of, you know, references to statutes in there. That's giving LBNA authority during the interim to issue RPLs, revised program legislation. Section 23, insurance claims. Allows us to accept and expend insurance that the state of Alaska might receive from a settlement. You know, somebody, a drunk driver, knocks over a light post and the insurance, we have to have the authority to receive money from the insurance company. Section 24 is National Petroleum Reserve Alaska Impact Grant Program. And this is money to communities from the federal government in regards to how they've been affected by oil and gas activities up on the slope. Section 25 is a reappropriation language. There is Hope Community Resources. There's a reappropriation for that for $125,000. That will that is the amount of money that the state requires is licensing fees for Hope. So we're costing them about that much money. The second one, Part B, is reinserting money for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation Supplemental Housing Program to the tune of $3 million.
Just a moment.
Take a breath for a second. Section 22,000 is reappropriated for licensing fees, for licensing requirements for Hope Community Resources. Is that the full amount, or help me understand that better?
There's a variety of items that Hope Community Resources were asking for in regards to capital appropriations. All the way down from want to need to necessity was the state requirements for licensing. And that was going to cost Hope Community Resources $125,000.
And if we could maybe hold questions to the end so we can get through, I'm sure there's going to be a chance for everybody to study this tonight. And we'll be back tomorrow and have a lot more to talk about.
Go ahead.
If
I could just ask Joe to take a breath every 20 sessions or so.
Mr. Michelle, go ahead.
All right. Supplemental housing. Section C, Cold Climate Housing Research Center. Section D, we took the next item on the major school maintenance program, Fairbanks North Star Borough Renovation Phase 4 of Barnett Magnet School. Section E is a reappropriation for the Alaska Marine Highway System Vessel Overhaul and Rehabilitation. Every year we have requirements for Coast Guard federal requirements for our boats, so they got to get dry docked and costs a lot. Next one is commercial passenger, Section 26, commercial vessel passenger tax account. These are reappropriations back into the commercial vessel passenger tax account from previous year's appropriations from Department of Transportation Public Facilities. Some of these projects were paid for with cruise ship head tax money. So when they're lapsing, they can't lapse back into the general fund. So they're being inserted into the commercial vessel passenger tax account, which was slightly in the negative this year, so it worked out well that these items were lapsing. Section 27 is a reappropriation from Mount Spur Geothermal, Project, and it's to the tune of $33,000 for AEA Electrical Emergencies Program. Section B is another reapprope from Mount Spur Geothermal, and it's $9.5 million. And these are the monies that were used to pay for the Renewable Energy Grant Fund that you'd see in the numbers section to pay for this round. Section D is a reappropriation to the Denali Commission for a federal-state partnership grant. These monies get used to leverage a lot of federal dollars. This item was going to lapse. We reappropriate it for the exact same purpose. Section 28 are the reappropriations to pay for this year's major school maintenance projects, items 1, 2, and 3. 3 and 4, I'm sorry. Section 29, the members will see that this is quite a long section. DEC has a number of water projects going on all around the state, and a lot of them had been completed with a small remaining balance. So the Senate used to the tune of $3,026,000. $800,000 of it will pay for SPAR. It will go into the SPAR account. And we're going to, it's numbered all the way down to number, it goes for about 3.5 pages. And all of the rest of the money that you see, the members will see from these, are paying for the NACNIC sewer relocation and system upgrade. It was the next item on the DEC sewer and water list. Section 30, Department of Health and Social Services.
Page 45.
Go ahead, sir. Section 30, these are reappropriations that, like the code blue that I spoke about earlier, these were other parts of it that the oversight of the word general fund wasn't inserted properly from the Fairbanks Virology reappropriation. So these are just fixing last year's mistake. Section 31, Department of Natural Resources, is a reappropriation for the Unified Permit Automation and Document Management, streamlining our permit system. Section 32 is a reappropriation from the Video Judicial Conference and Arraignment Study to pay for cameras on troopers' persons and in their cars. Section 33, we will see some reappropriations. None of these reappropriations, it was an agreement between the four co-chairs that there would be no reappropriations for new projects. These were just changing the scopes for the exact same project. Section 29 is just a different section of the state, but it's just same project, but just changing the scope slightly. Section 34 was just a rescope. Section 35 is a reappropriation for the Inner Island Ferry Authority for $250,000. Section 36 is a rescope. It's the exact same project. It was just lapsing. Subsection B is actually a new reapprope. It has to do with it's a pilot project program that would allow Norton Sound Health Corporation to see if they could take over the juvenile justice facility in that area and be able to pay for it with all federal money. That's what that is a study for. It's going to be a pilot program. Section 37 is a reappropriation provided by the governor. In the original budget coming from the Senate, There was $500,000 in for the governor for Arctic policy. They were able to use a reapprop, and the other body took that money and just put it back into the general fund. Section 38 is legislative appropriations. The first one is a small reappropriation to the Senate Special Committee for Arctic for work conducted this session. Subsection B is a large appropriation. The number is not in the bill. It's around the $7.5 million range. And all of this is being reappropriated to the exterior of the building for the seismic retrofit. Section 39 is the section that's, you know, the amount necessary to refund the to local governments and other entities their share of taxes and fees collected in the fiscal year. And you can see it was fisheries tax and fishery resource landing tax and those items, sharing the community share with them. Section 40 has to do with the mental health budget, and it's Medicaid language. Medicaid programs may not be accepted or expended without acceptable reformation plan and appropriation approved by the legislature. Section 41 is the Alaska Housing Capital Corp, the parking garage. The members will see just numerous items being deposited into this fund.
Parking garage is not a parking garage. It's a lockbox. I'm not sure everybody understands that. Go ahead, Mr. Michel.
And the members can just, I mean, the first couple are appropriation of the remaining balance of the Mount Spur Geothermal, the remaining balance of the Alaska Aerospace Corporation construction of new medium lift launch pad. Starting in section 41, subsection A is the geothermal reapprope. Subsection B.
We're on page 51 now. At the top.
Apologize.
Subsection B.
Subsection B was the aerospace. Subsection C was the leftover money for half of this $500,000 went to the Inner Island Ferry Authority, and this is the other $250,000 that is just going into the AHCC account. $500,000. I'm sorry. What's
$2,500,000?
$250,000.
Okay, of the $2,500,000. It was the original.
Subsection D is the total amount is $27,108,103. And all of these projects were projects that were submitted to the joint co-chair's office from different departments, projects that were lapsing. That were just going to go into the general fund. It was the attitude that these were capital dollars and we'd just not like to commingle them specifically into the general fund. That's about it. I mean, this fund spends like GF. If we were to make an appropriation out of this fund in future years, it would spend as GF would. It wouldn't be a designated general fund or an other fund. So it's just a way of separating out previous capital dollars and just kind of making sure that they look like capital dollars for the future.
Those lockboxes set up several years ago by the legislature as a place to park money that is not sweepable. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. These items go on for 5 or 6 pages, 7 pages, all the way up to subsection 90. There's 93 of them.
Page
62 is where the next section would begin.
I don't have it.
60.
Yeah.
Okay.
Page 60, section 42.
In the previous version of the bill, there was language in regards to the constitutional budget reserve. That language has been removed, so the members would not see that in their bill. Section 42 is the repealer section. A has to do with Alaska Marine Highway System interest, and it's just whether we count the Alaska Marine Highway System interest with the Alaska Marine Highway System or not. Section B is the one-time education money. Moving on to 43 is where we are lapsing different sections. Subsection B is funds that do not lapse. Subsection D is language that designates all the appropriations in this bill to that it is designated as capital. That way it doesn't get appropriated to the department under their operating budget. Section 44 is contingency language with Section 15 in the previous part of the bill. Section 45 are the sections that are supplemental. Section 46 are the regular appropriations. And Section 47 just refers to all this cleanup that happens in Section 45 and 46. Thank you for going through that.
And there you have it.
Sure, there was a quick mention of one time.
I couldn't hear you, sir. You used the microphone. Thank you, Representative Garrett.
Oh, thank you. There was a quick mention of education funds, and I missed where that was, one-time education funds.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, on page 60 of the members thing, in section 42, subsection B repeals sections 32C and 32D, chapter 18 of the session laws of Alaska 2014. If we were to look back in the session laws, those would be the two appropriations for the one-time education appropriation monies. Thank you very much. To correct myself on section 43, subsection C, that I didn't know, that was $1,075,000. That money was redistricting money that was pulled out of the governor's budget this year by the governor in his budget.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly before we adjourn for the day, I owe OMB Commissioner Pat Pitney a little bit of an apology. This morning when we were talking about the budget, my office and things, that she was more of a okay for me, and it was more of a okay for her while she was pulling out her hair, okay if I have to moment. So, Mr. Pitney, I'm sorry for that.
Any further questions at this time for Mr. Michelle? Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we just have the numbers? I mean, how much GGF and how many federal, or do I need to just add it all up?
Sorry. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, this version of SB 26, the capital budget, is spending $114 million of UGF, $60 million in designated general funds, $60.8 million in designated general funds, $70.4 million in other state funds, and $1,277,657,000 in federal funds.
Thank you very much.
Could you say again the last number, please?
$1,277,657,000 in federal receipts, federal funds.
Representative Guerra.
Couple of questions. Do you have a comparison on how much more that is than the prior version of this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, I do. One thing to factor in with that is this is factoring in the supplemental numbers, and as the supplemental budget is discussed by both bodies, there are items that need to be discussed further. So there were some supplemental items in the Senate version, and there is quite a bit of supplemental items that were eventually solved and reconciled between the two bodies in the House version. So the differences between the two is there is, in total, there is $48,415,000 difference between the House and the Senate of general funds. Of that, $40 million of it is the Medicaid. This is the Medicaid money that was going into the FY15 supplemental. And only an additional $250,000 in designated general funds from the Senate, and that is the snow track money. And there are negative $2.5 million in other state funds from the Senate that had to do with supplemental items.
Any further questions at this time? Representative Guerra?
I'll just leave it at the one big one, Mr. Chair. On page 14, of our page 14, the Kinnick Arm crossing money. It shows up at $45,300,000 of Kinnick Arm crossing money that's being added. You said that was federal funds. Where was that before this version of the budget? Where was that money parked, sitting?
That money on page 14 of the members' packet was parked, sitting. This is future federal receipt authority. This isn't previous expenditures for a Kinnick Arm crossing. But those numbers on line 26, the National Highway System and Non-National Highway System Pavement and Bridge Reconstruction Refurbishment, that number was $45,300,000 higher in the previous version of the bill, is where the future federal receipt authority was previously sitting.
Through the chair, I guess I don't understand. So in the prior version, was there Kinnick Arm crossing future receipt money?
Through the chair, no, there was not, Representative Guerra.
And through the chair, currently on line 23, this is not appropriated money. This is future receipt money for the Kinnick Arm crossing. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that is correct, to my knowledge.
And then through the chair, you're saying before it was $90 million dedicated somewhere else? Is that what?
I would say, through the chair, Representative Guerra, the National Highway System, non-National Highway, if we were to look at a previous iteration of this bill that might have came over from the other body, that $109,920,000 would have had an extra $45,300 in it. That number would have just been larger by that same amount. So when the words Kinnick Arm Crossing were placed into this bill, the number on line 26 was reduced by the same amount.
Thank you. I certainly have other questions, but I'll leave those, Mr. Chair.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you. On that same point, is the $45 million consistent with what Governor Parnell submitted in the original budget proposal, the receipt authority for Kinnick Arm Crossing?
Through the chair, very close to that number, if not the same number. I don't know what the exact number was from Governor Parnell's bill that was so many governor's amendments ago.
Could you find out that number for me, please? And also the number for Juneau Access, which appeared in Governor Parnell's version of the
Okay, seeing no immediate further questions, Representative Guttenberg.
Just one more question. And the same thing on page 14, line 23. I'm just wondering what the impact of that dedicating that $45 million to a single project has on federal money receipts for other projects.
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, in conversations with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, removing the $45 million of receipt authority from the National Highway System on line 26 was a placeholder. The governor did not know how much was going to be available, and as session has moved forward, they're more than comfortable with that $109 million. And I don't know, through the chair, I don't know the direct impact, but in speaking with the department, that was more than enough to do what they needed to do with 109. If not, because it was just future receipt authority, not secured to actual dollars, I mean, I would have just put that number in there, and it would have just been a number just like it is now. But with DOT saying that they were fine with the 109, it wasn't pushing them at all.
Well, I want to point out what happens. The STIP committee gets together and does amendments to its STIP list. And every time there's an appropriation like this, projects move back. And I have a list of the last time they moved back off next year, previous year, off the list completely, statewide. So it's too early to assume what they're going to happen with this one, but I'll be asking anyway.
Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Michelle, I believe this was requested by the Department of Transportation.
Through the chair, it was.
All right. Well, seeing no further questions from the committee at this time, we'll set this bill aside. Tomorrow we will hear SB 26 and take amendments. We'll have House Bill 182, individual income tax and tax credits. And we'll also, if we have time, try to get back to House Bill 81.
Mr. Chair.
Our next House committee meeting is scheduled for tomorrow morning at 8:30 a.m. And with that, at 4 p.m., Mr. Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ledge Finance has asked me to tell the members that all the regular documents that are associated with the capital budget are available on the web now. This version just came out a few minutes ago, but they've posted the documents already.
Thank you very much. And with that, we are adjourned.